Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
Hello and welcome to DW's Africa Link program this Wednesday, the 5th of July. I'm Jane Ayeka Kumet.
And with your responses, I am Abubakar Jalo.
And here is what we've lined up for you. President Jacob Zuma hints on redistribution of land without compensation.
We agree on the imperative to accelerate land redistribution and land reform.
Tensions in Zambia as cabinet meets to discuss the country's state of affairs.
People are anxiously waiting for the decision by the head of state because he was categorical in his statement last night that he's going to take some measures. And one of the things he said is that, let me be a dictator for once, if I can.
And our social media subject is the 50th anniversary of the Biafran War, in which over 2.5 million Nigerians lost their lives. We will have all of your responses, if we can, a little later.
Stay tuned for all that and a lot more to come after we hear what's been happening from around the globe.
I'm Sertan Sanderson with the DW News. The US has confirmed North Korea's test launch of an intercontinental ballistic missile for the first time. U.S. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson said that the United States strongly condemned North Korea's launch, stressing that it represented a new escalation of the threat to the U.S. and its allies. The U.N. Security Council is expected to hold a meeting on the issue on Wednesday at the request of the U.S., Japan, and South Korea. North Korea's ballistic missiles could be capable of reaching parts of U.S. territory, such as Alaska and Hawaii. Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan said that Germany was committing suicide by not letting him speak to Turks living in Germany during his upcoming visit to the country for the G20 summit in Hamburg. The Turkish leader also said that as long as Germany did not send supporters of Erdogan's political archenemy, Fethullah Gulen, back to Turkey, his country would continue to view Germany as a nation that protected terrorists. Ankara has blamed Gulen, a Muslim cleric living in self-imposed exile in the U.S. state of Pennsylvania, for orchestrating a failed coup last July, during which more than 260 people died. Bilateral ties between Germany and Turkey have been in decline ever since. You're listening to Deutsche Welle News. Morocco's top diplomat announced that the United Nations will lead efforts to end the row over the disputed state in Western Sahara, the self-styled Sahrawi Arab Democratic Republic. Moroccan Foreign Minister Nasir Bourita said that the African Union had backed the move, adding he was very satisfied by the decision to allow the UN to lead attempts in resolving the Western Sahara question.
The summit took a decision on the Sahara issue. This time, there is a great development, especially in terms of the language used. It is a language that is in line with the UN decisions. There is also a recognition that the issue is on the UN and that the AU is in support of the efforts of UN in this sense.
Morocco had left the African Union in 1984 over its recognition of the disputed territories as a sovereign state, but joined back earlier this year. Morocco considers Western Sahara an integral part of its territory. The International Criminal Court, or ICC, is due to give a verdict tomorrow regarding South Africa's failure to arrest Sudanese President Omar Hassan al-Bashir during a visit to the country in June 2015. Bashir is accused of masterminding genocide and other war crimes in his campaign to crush a revolt in Sudan's Darfur region. The Hague-based ICC had issued arrest warrants for Bashir back in 2009 and 2010, which South Africa, a member of the ICC, failed to uphold when Sudanese president visited the country. And for more news and information, please go to dw.com. I'm Sertan Sanderson.
You're listening to DW Africa Link with me, Jane Ayeko Kumet.
And hosting your comment, I am Abubakar Jalo.
We start the program in South Africa, where the ANC has concluded its six-day policy conference with President Jacob Zuma, hinting on a possibility of redistributing land. Zuma further said, where necessary and unavoidable, this would be done without compensation. Free education for the poor, observation of the law, and unity within the ANC were some of Zuma's key points as he closed the meeting. For more on this, Subri Govender reports.
After 6 days of intensive discussions on serious issues affecting the unity and existence of the oldest liberation movement in Africa, the ruling ANC's National Policy Conference came to an end today. The delegates agreed to adopt a series of proposals, among them party unity, high leadership values, integrity, corruption, and the socio-economic emancipation of the black majority. President Jacob Zuma used his closing address to support a proposal on land expropriation without compensation.
We agree on the imperative to accelerate land redistribution and land reforms. Where it is necessary and unavoidable, this may include expropriation without compensation within the law, within the constitution.
Land remains a key issue ahead of the December ANC National Conference, where a successor to President Zuma will be chosen. The two current front runners are Deputy President Cyril Ramaphosa and Nkosazana Dlamini Zuma, former African Union chairperson and Zuma's ex-wife. Dlamini Zuma has made land redistribution from whites to blacks without compensation one of her main policies. The party delegates also agreed to amend the ANC's constitution to accommodate two party deputies. President Zuma said that would help heal tensions in the party. He also called for an end to divisive leadership battles, saying that they undermine the ANC support.
Of all political parties put together, we have a heavier responsibility. We are governing the country as an ANC. We therefore have to act responsibly, with dignity, with discipline. We have to take South Africa to prosperity. We have the capacity and foresight to do so.
The ANC party, which was founded in 1912, has ruled the country since apartheid ended in 1994. Support for the party has waned since Zuma became president in 2009, a decline that's been partly attributed to his implication in a succession of scandals. Several top party officials have warned that it risks losing its overall majority in the 2019 general elections.
Subri Govender in South Africa.
And as usual, South Africa, lot of responses.
Yes.
Washington from Zimbabwe said South Africa is going in the right direction. Racial imbalances should be addressed, but I just hope their land reform will not be implemented in the same manner like their fellow brothers here in Zimbabwe. And Danieli Wanyama from Kenya said ANC should know that things change and it's time for them to rise and save the party.
Yes, that's from those two. But there's one person who is kind of disagreeing, and that is Lamin Fedari from Bufrot in Gambia. He says, not yet, as they have to tackle all the above, which is affecting the party. Some of their comments.
Yeah, and a final comment here from Mark Kofi Ohemeng, who is a Ghanaian living in Finland. He wrote saying, it's just a political compensation tactic to whip up their dwindling support base and what will happen to those lands anyways. And it's another area of corruption in the pipeline.
Yes, so much from South Africa. Unfortunately, we can't read all of them. So we come back here in Germany, where Germany and China have agreed to cooperate on trade and airspace. The agreement was reached in a meeting between German Chancellor Angela Merkel and the Chinese President Xi Jinping ahead of the G20 summit, which kicks off just in 2 days' time. The interesting part of their meeting was that it was conducted under the so-called panda diplomacy. Amiri Tachema has been speaking to Melinda Crane, DW's chief political correspondent. Take a listen.
From the look of it, everybody is very, very pleased by these new Berlin bears. The chancellor reminded us that the bear is the traditional emblem of Berlin. Berlin long had a panda. In fact, it was the oldest panda anywhere in the world in a zoo, but it did die in 2012. And then there was a lot of diplomacy to try to get new pandas. And the pandas were now presented officially today by the Chinese president with the words that he hopes they will be an ambassador forever closer ties between Germany and China.
As you said, Merkel and Xi Jinping addressed the guests there. How important was this gesture of panda diplomacy as a reinforcement of relations, close relations between the two countries?
You've used this term, panda diplomacy. That's an established term for what's happening here. Panda diplomacy goes back a long ways, and indeed, it is considered a very special, a very important gesture when China loans its pandas. It doesn't anymore give them away. These pandas are here only on loan, but open-ended. And the great hope, of course, is that they will fall in love and have small pandas, which then cements the ties between the two countries. But it goes beyond symbolism alone. The Chinese president has repeatedly called in recent months for closer ties with Germany. It's known to be one of his chief foreign policy priorities. He's been saying that China wants to become a real stakeholder in the international system. And Angela Merkel, very, very pleased to hear that, with all, of course, reservations about the degree of the commitment and reservations about some of the issues on which the two countries don't agree.
From that story, which Belinda Crane, DW's chief correspondent, was talking about, we go to back to Africa. Now, if you are in the East African region and you're unhappy with your salary, which could be something to do with 100 euro per month, think about a primary school teacher in South Sudan who currently earns just about 17 euro per month and sometimes it takes months before it comes. In a war-torn country where the cost of living is almost as high as somewhere in the developed world, one would wonder how teachers survive. Well, the European Union has announced that it will donate 20 million euro every month to more than 30,000 primary school teachers in South Sudan. With this, teachers will get a monthly salary of just about 35 euro. James Shimanyula with what this means for the teachers.
For more than 3 months, thousands of civil servants have gone without pay, among them more than 30,000 primary school teachers. But now the teachers have cause to smile after the European Union donated $23 million to cater for their monthly salaries in the next 18 months, pending renewal for another 18 months. South Sudan Education Minister Deng Hokuyai welcomed the move.
There are more than 3,000 schools in South Sudan with pupils enrolled this year, and the committee urged other schools to push ahead to meet the requirements so that teachers can receive this support.
The European donation has been received with mixed reactions by teachers. Some, like Luke Diang, say education standards in South Sudan have gone down due to teachers feeling being neglected by the government.
Delayed salaries really affect our work. So at this time, we welcome people who want to assist us so that we are able to do our work effectively. If the payment can start today, we will be happy.
Alex Mabior wants the government to work closely with international organizations such as the European Union to avoid the recurrence of the current crisis.
We are facing starvation, suffering, voting from our resident up to the school, returning back. We are exhausted. We need help from both sides, government and the organization who offer to us this money.
James Manula reporting.
And now to Nigeria. Tomorrow marks the 50th anniversary of the Biafra War, where 2.5 million Nigerians died in that civil war, mostly Southeast Nigerians. And we have a response here from Namdi, who's living in London, England. He says this is a result of high income and social inequality laced with corruption prevalent in Nigeria and other African countries. Another response here from Chukwudu, who's living in Germany. This is what he had to say.
The only solution is to allow Biafra have a referendum. Once there's a referendum, everybody decide whether to remain as Nigeria or go back the way everything has been before the white man came. There's no how someone can try to amend the broken bottle. It's not possible. Nigeria cannot be restructured. Nigeria cannot be one, because saying that Nigeria to be one is like mixing oil and water together.
And then the final response here from Anthony Awosom from Cameroon. He says the most discussed subject in Nigeria today is what is called restructuring. And indeed, it's so popular in this subject matter.
Interesting comments there. We'll read them a little later. This is DW's Africa Link program with me, Jen Ayeko-Kumet.
And with your responses, I am Abubakar Jalo.
Still to come, the challenge of returning African diaspora and being careful with water and electricity.
And we are still monitoring your responses to the 50th anniversary of the Biafra War of Independence, which is happening tomorrow, Thursday.
But first, we go to Zambia. Now, the cabinet in Zambia has been meeting to resolve the current state of affairs in the country. The meeting comes just a day after fire gutted part of the country's biggest market in the capital, Lusaka. The cause of the fire remains unknown, but government has described it as an act of arson. Tensions have been rising in the country since the arrest of the opposition leader Hakainde Hichilema. Our correspondent Cassie Sikombe in Lusaka has been following developments and now brings us to date with what's happening on the ground.
People are anxiously waiting for the decision by the head of state because he was categorical in his statement last night that he's going to take some measures. And one of the things he said is that, let me be a dictator for once, if I can. Don't stop me because some people are going to lose their rights. The vice president also, Inonge Wina, just shortly after the president said that, also echoed the president's statement. And this is what she said, that there will be no mercy for the perpetrators of violence in Zambia, and not even from a mother like her. She thinks that the perpetrators of violence in Zambia have taken advantage of the government and that new measures need to be put in place.
New measures need to be put in place. Now, given the current state of affairs in the country, could there be a possibility that the president would decide to take drastic measures like announcing a state of emergency?
That's one of the possibilities that could be announced, but we are yet to await for an official announcement from the government of the Republic of Zambia in that regard. But also there are some reactions really from some opposition parties like the Green Party today. They were advising the president not to go that route because in the recent past, he's actually been hinting on invoking a state of emergency.
Should it be that the president actually declares a state of emergency, how would this affect people's everyday life?
It means that you can't move at certain times, you know. There will be curfews. For instance, it could be that maybe from 10 p.m. or 12 p.m., whatever time will be decided, people cannot move. They'll be arrested. They'll be kept in prison without, having their court cases being heard. Those are some of the issues. Their constitutional rights will actually be non-existent. So the police even has the right to come and search you in your own home, and there will be so many restrictions. So meaning that it will instill a lot of fear, and a lot of people will be affected.
Cathy Sikombe in Lusaka. Now, Abu, I'm just having a look at our page now, and comments are flowing on this as well.
So many sad responses.
Yes.
So many sad responses. DJs from Rwanda said the political activists are behind that bad act of destroying infrastructures. My view is that that meeting will never find solution to the political crisis.
Yes, like you pointed out, they are all very sad comments here. Razka Momoni says, what's happening in Zambia is very sad. If public office is all about service to the people and not personal benefits, then he asks, why is there so much tension and even death when it comes to elections?
And Agbaegon Kiti Ezuzu said, oh, it's very sad indeed. My prayers with the affected individuals.
So much for Zambia.
On the spot.
Now, let's talk about some issues concerning me and you, Abu, as diaspora Africans here. Many Africans who leave the continent as youth in search of greener pastures don't come back home or don't go back home. And if they do, they find it rather difficult to integrate to the very societies that they once belonged. Building on the African solution for African problems premise, one could talk of African brains steering African initiatives. One such initiative is the Returnees. Ngala Kilian Chimton with why and why was the program founded and how it works.
Your attention, please. This is the final call for LTU Flight 1550.
They left the country as kids, but now many Cameroonians in the diaspora are flying back home. They say they want to invest in the country of their birth, but very often, several barriers stand on their way. Kilian Mayua, Cameroon's Nigeria-based IT specialist, doesn't feel he will ever come back to Cameroon after a failed attempt to set up a business in his country of birth.
I tried to set up and run a business in Cameroon a few years ago, and my experience was disheartening. It took me a little over 3 months and about 750,000 francs to incorporate an IT services company. We started off with a major client who required a software customized for their use. We worked on it for over 8 months, and at the end of it all, the client decided we did not deserve to be paid tens of millions of francs because we were too young. We went back and forth with them on several forums and decided to seek redress at the court. Funny enough, a discretionary system came into play. As we speak today, no verdict has come out of that. The only resort for me was pack my bags, count my losses, and start all over again.
And he is not alone. Diaspora Cameroonians coming to invest face the stark realities of corruption and bogus procedures for setting up businesses in the country. Miranda Oben, a German-based IT expert, has become a leading campaigner for the return of diaspora Cameroonians into the country. Still, she recognizes that the environment is still really hostile.
When you leave at the age of 16, you're not confronted with government offices yet. But when you return at the age of 32, 35, and you have to follow every single document, and everyone thinks you have to, you know, bribe or corrupt or give some money, leave some money here, their whole system turns against that because they're not used to it. So they find a lot of difficulties being able to cope with a new world. That's the first thing. The second thing they tell me is the taxation. The tax system here is horrible, and the taxes are too high as compared to what they have, as their businesses. When they tax you so high, your business dies in about 3 or 5 years. You have to be extremely tough to be able to make it after 3 to 5 years.
These difficulties have over time strained relations between Cameroon and its diaspora, with public authorities frequently accusing the diaspora of tarnishing the country's image abroad. The finger-pointing doesn't, however, sit well with Miranda Oben. She is the initiator of a project dubbed The Returnees, a project designed to encourage Africans in the diaspora to come back home and settle or invest.
Our focus is to highlight and shine the light on the returnees, people who have packed their bags from the diaspora and come back home. The reason why they've come back home, the reasons are many, but they are home. They've made a step which I haven't made yet. That fact alone made me say, wow, I really respect and celebrate you guys. And as you see on our flyers or our information stand, it's an airplane which is there indicating return, flying. So you flew out into the world. You flew back home.
Her strategy is to highlight the inspirational stories of those who have returned, and that way, the skeptics will come to the realization that despite the challenges, Cameroon could still be a land of promise for its sons and daughters.
Ngala Kilian Chimtom with that report. And now some environment talk.
Living Planet Africa.
This is a story of a brother and a sister in their 20s who are determined to transform the way Burkina Faso consumes and saves water and electricity. They have set up a social enterprise called Farafina Eco Engineering. Brampost Humus met them in their brand new office in Ouagadougou and now brings us their story.
This new ventilator is not running on solar energy yet, but its first rotations were not without difficulty, as you can hear. It got better later. Mind you, with an outside temperature of 44 degrees Celsius, you need fresh air. From early March to early June, it is very hot here and the need for water and electricity is great. This is the challenge for the brains behind Farafina Eco Engineering.
I'm Semboro Ali. I've just finished my study in hydraulic engineering.
My name is Khadija Semboro. I am from Burkina.
I'm working on fields of renewable energy and energy efficiency.
Indeed, brother and sister both followed similar paths to get to where they are today. With the help of their parents, friends, scholarships, they made it through their engineering courses. Both are working in areas where the needs are enormous: water and electricity. In fact, you can only be guaranteed these two amenities if you live in a town or a city. And even there, these services can be cut at any time, especially during the hottest months of the year. With that in mind, Ali and Khadija started their company.
Our project is to sensitize, firstly, to sensitize people, to educate them, and after to propose them some innovative solution that can allow them to reduce their consumption.
Reducing consumption is a must in a country where you hear this only from June to September. So Ali and Khadija sell drip feeders for plants at home or in the office. You will use 30% less water that way. And they sell solar-powered motion detectors, so you don't have to keep the lights on all night to keep the burglars away. This is a business strategy: selling smart products to people who can afford them and start making some money for the next step, because the ultimate goals of Ali and Khadija do not lie in the towns and cities of Burkina Faso.
My goal is to provide electricity to my village.
Both of them freely admit that it's not easy being a startup. They're writing a business plan, they're hoping to use crowdfunding to expand their services, and they welcome anyone who wants to give them a helping hand. So with all that, where do they see themselves in 5 years?
In 5 years, I dream our company will be the first, the number one company, the reference for energy and water sector in West Africa.
Bram Posthumous in Ouagadougou. Abu, I like that story. Somebody has a great dream. Young Africans dreaming, isn't it?
It's quite interesting, and it's really, really nice to see such a project by young people in Africa. Now, I have good news.
Yes.
We have a winner for the Deutsche Welle Bloggers competition in Nigeria.
Oh, yeah.
But if you want to know the name of the winner, you need to check our Facebook page, DW Africa, and we would also announce it on WhatsApp.
I know, they must have had a hard time picking the winner because there were quite lots of entries there.
It went on and on.
Great African bloggers there.
Over hundreds of our participants.
Yes.
Anyways, let me take you now to our main story that we are focusing on, our social media segment. That is the 50th anniversary of the Biafra War of Independence.
Oh, yes.
Where 2.5 million Nigerians lost their lives. We have
so
many responses.
It's actually 3.5. Abu?
Well, I think the official figure so far, it says 2.5.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. All right. And Prince Michael Godwin said 3.5 million Biafrans, well, that's his figure there, killed, and over 2 million children were starved to death by the Nigerian government, backed up by the British, to commit this greatest deadly genocide. Lots of accusation there from Prince.
I
don't think
see.
I should continue on it.
Well, if you don't want to continue, I have just seen a comment coming in from one Ekena Aneobe, who says it's a debt that will hate forever in the minds of Jackyak Gowon. I hope I pronounce his name rightly.
Actually, that's one of the politicians who led the Biafran War of Independence.
Oh yes, I've always been trying to pronounce his name. At least I know Jackyak Gowon. Sounds rather
hard,
it has a good rhythm there. And he says his ego made him to brush aside the Aburi Accord, which he freely consented. Upon realizing his folly, he told the world press he was going for police action on the poor people.
Yeah, and Jude Obina said, all we are asking from Nigeria and other nations of the world is a referendum for Biafra. As he called it, hashtag Biafra exit, and we are not asking for war.
Yes, interesting. And Lamina Fadera, again, here from Gambia, says, Biafrans and the Nigerians at large know the consequences and effects of the Biafra war, and indeed it did not solve any problem. Let it be a thing of the past. War has no place in our lives. That's quite a good one.
Yep. Emmanuel Ndukwe, a Nigerian living in South America, said the remedy between Nigerians, the Nigerian government and Biafra state is freedom for all Biafrans. And a final one, Abdul Aziz Mohamed Sani, who's writing from Ghana, from Kumasi, Ghana said, when you look at closely, you realize that youth and unemployment could be the root cause because of the Biafra agitation.
Thank you for keeping in touch with Africa Link. I'm Jane Ayeka-Kumet.
And I'm Abubakar Jalo.
Bye-bye.